I would just simply go back to the way we started and, you know, using these two words kind of as the theme of our conversation today, holism and simplicity. Watching people come to Christ in West Africa, as we had the opportunity to do, where we served personally as a family, and then seeing those whole families where the family unit is non-existent in that culture for the most part for a lot of different reasons.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Very, very weak. And then, of course, to see them find their identity in Christ and their direction in God's word in that area of their life, I would just simply say I have seen the gospel not just transform families. I've seen the gospel actually be the genesis of a family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was no family.
That's awesome.
There was no family.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, people come to Christ, the parents obviously, and immorality and unfaithfulness and irresponsibility, all of that changes.
Yeah.
And it is amazing. So all I would say to the parents in the U.S. is make sure that the things that are important but are to be categorized more as the busy stuff and not the foundational stuff. Let the foundational stuff be the thing that defines you and your family, e.g., primarily the gospel. Let the gospel define you.
Our children are leaving the faith in droves.
As a result.
Oh, I got a pause here.
We're going live right now.
How can we raise our kids to stand firm, have a faith that lasts, and navigate such a time as this?
To turn a nation, you have to take the next generation.
Today in the news, COVID-19 numbers.
I'm Jake McCandless, and this is my podcast, Stand Firm Parents. We're working together to help our children have a faith that lasts.
And now, here's Jake McCandless.
Yeah, that's me. Jake McCandless, this is Stand Firm Parents. Thanks for tuning in. It's not right, right? You pushed a button, you subscribed, it popped up. Thank you for listening, watching, however it's working in your world. And again, this is Stand Firm Parents, and I am in LifeWord Studios. And today I have a guest joining me in studio. We're on a journey to try to figure out, okay, how can we help our families have a faith that lasts? And so I reach out to folks and say, hey, I'd love to have you on. This is what I'd like to ask you. And they're like, you want to have me on? You want me to talk about what? And this is a parent podcast because most aren't in the family ministry, parent ministry sphere. And that's the case with our guest today. But I'm doing this investigatively, like to say, okay, let's broaden how we see things. Let's do some thinking here and see how that can change how we parent, how we bring up the next generation. It's exactly where we're going with our guest, and we're in a new series. It's the pastor in me that's doing these episodes in series, right? I'm just stuck in that pastor, you know, the pastors in our sermon series, right? So we've had two so far. We had parents as disciple makers. We had Israel and our children. Then we had some standalone episodes. And then we're in this third one. And really for me, though, joking aside, yeah, I'm sure some of this comes from that pastor thinking, but I want to approach these topics from a 360 view or as much as possible. And so this one is going to be thoroughly. This is going to be several episodes because I think it's so important. But we're not going to just talk about flat out, let's develop a fully integrated faith in our children. Rather, we're going to hear from a lot of different guests, a lot of different perspectives that I think kind of point to what that might mean. And I don't have it fully figured out. That's why we're having these interviews. Okay, enough introduction. Let's get into this. Well, let's introduce our guest and let's get into this. But we're talking about a fully integrated faith. Our first episode talked about tools versus end game, just getting us thinking about what this means. And I think one of the ways to look at this, because when we're talking about a fully integrated faith, that's the term I'm using. I think sometimes it's important just to put some new terminology in the mix just to shake it up, just to get us thinking. But I think ultimately what we're talking about is a brand of Christianity that we're passing on. Let's get back to what did Christianity look like in that first century? What is it looking at in places where it's on fire? And as parents, as Christian parents, we only know the version, the brand of Christianity that we know, right? And so this discussion today and the discussions that are going to follow are all about helping us understand maybe what we don't know, broaden our perspective, and then let that shape us as parents as we try to fully integrate faith. Today's guest is going to give us a global perspective of Christianity. Super excited about this opportunity. He's coming down the stairs, which is really awesome. LifeForge Studios shares a building with BMA Global, who is doing missions around the world. And I have the opportunity to talk with their president, the president of BMA Global, Dr. John David Smith. He's just fresh from coming from teaching a missions class over at the college, and we get the chance to visit with him. Thanks for joining me. John David, could you paint a picture of what Christianity looks like beyond America and around the world?
I think two words for me would kind of sum it up, what we could learn from the international community of believers. The two words would be simplicity and holism. So I get a lot of people go on a short-term mission trip and they'll say, wow, you know, we went in that worship service and it was amazing. I didn't understand a word they said, but you could just tell they were so serious.
Yeah.
And that's true, because in the United States, we tend to compartmentalize God.
Yes.
You know, God's reserved for 10 to 12 on Sunday morning. God, you don't have anything to do with the way I treat my wife, the way I raise my kids, what I watch on TV, what I view online. But God, 10 to 12 on Sunday, that's all you. And so we compartmentalize. They don't do that. So like we say, they come to Christ, they come to Christ holistically, the whole part of them. All of them, we would say. So holism, I think, is a lesson we could learn in our culture. The other one is simplicity, and not as opposed to complex, but just, you mentioned it in our conversation before we started, the official conversation about busyness.
Yeah,
I think for me.
Oh, don't tell that.
Yeah. Well, for me personally, Jake, and
it's
I
a parent podcast, so it definitely relates.
So. I think busyness is one of the greatest spiritual cancers we fight. It is for me personally.
Yeah.
And so simplicity, the ability to simplify our lives, which in reality is just a new way to say, hey, we got to have margin and we got to cut some things out, and that's not easy.
Well, you threw me under the bus, our conversation ahead of time. You asked how the family was doing.
I acknowledge, brother. I said it's my greatest barrier as well. I mean, busyness is brutal. It's just brutal. And in that vein, Jake, I just had a planned sabbatical, and I described sabbatical in very positive terms, but the greatest thing was that for a short time, I had busyness eradicated, and man, it was awesome. It was awesome.
That can happen?
It can happen. You know, I don't have children anymore. I'm at a different phase of life.
Not at home. Yeah.
That's true. Good point.
Yeah. I hope they don't hear that part.
Yeah, I have children, but they're just not at home. That's right.
Yeah. They're not doing softball. Like, so I'm here 3 hours away, trying to get back this evening for a softball game. My wife is taken to a doctor's appointment, cheer practice for one, softball game for the other, and we had to miss another practice somewhere in there. So,
hey, brother, I get it. Because when my boys were at home, there were times where I would stay to watch a football game, and then I'd have to drive all night to be at a Saturday meeting. And I would do it. You do what you have to do. And hey, it's just a part of life, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't trade it. I want to be there. You know, I want to get that in. And so we started the conversation. I was like, I don't know how you do all the stuff you do. I mean, at all. I'm like, I know I can't do what I'm doing, you're doing so much. As I shared in your bio, you've got a doctorate in missiology. You just came from teaching a class from Central Baptist College, my alma mater.
Right.
And you're the president of BMA Global, denominational missions organization with missionaries globally in North America. Can you tell us a bit about what BMA Global is?
Yes, absolutely. And before I get to that particular answer, you know, I am busy like you are, like everyone tends to be. The way it gets done around here is a great team.
Yeah.
It is. It's a great team. But yeah, BMA Global, as you said, it is the missions arm of the Baptist Missionary Association of America. So we have the express purpose of, you know, creating, promoting a compelling missions vision for our churches, and then helping come alongside those local churches to carry out that missions vision. Primarily, we usually summarize what we do in three words. Number one is we send. We come along churches to help send missionaries, and we do that all over the world. Then to start, because we are church planters by emphasis. And then support leaders and churches, of course, around the world. So those are kind of our three pillars that represent our mission statement, our vision and values. And man, it's an amazing, amazing experience to be part of it every day, to see people go into the nations. You know, that's an arduous process. It's not easy. And yet that's the model that God has given us to reach the nations. And it's just both challenging and extremely exhilarating to be involved in it. It really is.
Yeah. So how many nations are you guys in, or can you say?
We have active ongoing ministry. Now, we have influence in others, but if we have active ongoing ministry, it's approximately 67 countries.
Wow. Yep. That's incredible. Yep. Working with, you know, parents, it's kind of like I want to bring them into, you know, because we only see the Christianity we see.
Right.
And I think, and you didn't know exactly where I was going, because this is kind of a setup, because I really wanted to interview you and get this image of this picture of the church globally, or churches globally, because I don't think that we know what it could be, but we struggle. If we're going to be imparting faith to our children, I'm hoping we can impart a fully integrated faith, which you called holistic, which was beautiful. So when you talked about those two lessons being like Christianity as a whole, there's not compartmentalized,
right?
And the simplicity that you see. Were you describing Christianity as it's lived out in other nations around the world, and or how church is done?
Yeah, both. Really, in many ways. Obviously, you can't just, you know, what are the universals here that apply everywhere? Probably none. So it is contingent on the context. But by and large, I'll just use a very general term, the majority world. You know, some used to be called the third world, and then the developing world. Now it's called the majority world. So the majority of cultures in the world would, I think, when they come to faith and their expression of church, it does look more holistic, way more holistic than typical American expression of that. Absolutely.
Along those lines, when you think about the church in the West, I'm rocking my church planting shirt as I'm here, and it's something that we're trying to combat. We're trying to see what does it look like when you make it simple, when you get away from just buildings and programs. Right. But when we think about Christianity, church here in the West, here in America, we tend to think buildings, we tend to think services, we tend to think programs. Is that the way it is globally?
Well, only where Westerners have imposed that, you know, and that has happened. And I certainly, I want to be very transparent in saying I have walked into several countries where, let's just be honest, I could have been in Piney Woods, Arkansas, except for maybe the local language. Architecture, structure of the service, three hymns and a sermon. I mean, the whole bit, it just looked the same. And you could tell, okay, that's not wrong necessarily, but certainly that there have been that. Now, obviously, I can point to you a lot of other places in the world where that's not the case. I remember in Africa, the BMA there had a church. They called themselves Church on the Move, Jake.
I like it.
And here's why. They met under a big tree, and they met for hours, being event-oriented people instead of time-oriented like we are. And so they didn't mind staying a long time, but the shade would move. And so they literally moved around the tree during church service, and they called themselves the Church on the Move. But it was about 150 people. Pretty impressive. But no, you know, the emphasis on buildings really, really didn't start with us. But I think, like a lot of other things culturally, we have perfected it, or taken it to a whole new level. And, you know, that concentration on a building, man, You're opening up a can for me that I could talk about for a long time. You know, I'm I'm brought back to a study I looked at during my missiological studies, and it was done by the U.S. Center for World Missions. And basically what they tried to do around the world was determine what was the return on investment, and they tried to measure it. What's the cost per baptized believer in each country?
Oh, well.
This was done like 2010. And so,
oh, cool. Let's go there. This is cool.
All right. No, because this has it's apropos to your point about the building not being the center of the Christian universe. But Mozambique, Africa was the cheapest one in that study, and it was $1,400 per baptized believer. So what they did was they took all the money that had been spent on those ministries, whether it was travel, missionaries, pastor, buildings, literature, seminars, and then said, okay, how many people did we baptize this year? And, of course, it's not perfect, obviously. So we already all know what country was the most expensive. The only question is how much, and this was 2010, and it was $1.2 million per baptized believer in the United States. And when I first heard that, I thought, there's no way. But let's stop and weigh it and weigh it out and think about it. I mean, we're sitting in Conway, Arkansas right now. Man, there are some massive church buildings in Conway, Arkansas. If you did the quick math on how many millions of dollars have been spent just in this one town in the United States, and then hey, every church justifies every expense that it's going to help us reach people for Jesus.
Right.
Let's build the gymnasium.
Right.
We'll reach people for Jesus. Let's buy the church bus. Let's go to that seminar. Let's hire that new staff member. Let's build that extra building. It's all going to help us reach people for Jesus, but does it really translate into that always? We would argue and admit, maybe is the better verb, no, it doesn't. But, man, weighty issues. And you know, I will say this, BMA Global, out of our budget in the last 15 years, has not spent one penny on a church building. That's a big statement.
That's a huge statement.
I want people to let that sink in. Now, the asterisk is we do have missionaries that raise funds on their own for different projects. They could have certainly done that. We have donors that want to do that. We are faithful to the donors, will always, whether it be a church or individual. But as an organization, the money that we have discretion over, we do not build buildings.
That's fascinating. Okay. Oh, so Mozambique, $1,400.
Right.
Do you remember that number again for the United States?
$1.2 million.
$1.2 million
per baptized believer.
Per baptized.
In 2010. That was the U.S. Center for World Missions.
In 2010. That was before the current inflation.
Now, I have seen another study, full disclosure, and this one was done by, drawing a blank, the seminary in the Northeast. It's not McConnell. I'll think of it. But they have a big research element, and their number was about 900,000 per baptized believer, which is still shocking.
Yeah. But I get it. So we're church planting, Northwest Arkansas here.
Yep.
And, you know, our heart is our dream is to have Bible studies planted in every subdivision and to be a church on the move, not just for shade, but, missionally. But in right that place, small town's booming, and it's a million an acre. Just commercial real estate.
Wow.
And we would love to have a building to work out of. I mean, we're in a building right now, you know, not against that at all, but the cost element. But I think what I'm seeing and what we just talked about, we just had this discussion locally because this property I've been had my eye on came available. Mm-hmm. But the conversation with our leaders was, if we make this move, how is that going to impact, you know, the movement, the mobility that we already have? And so I wonder this, how we treat things in America. When we think church, when we think Christianity, we tend to think church. And when we think church, we tend to think buildings, programs, locations, services. Compared to globally what you see, how does this understanding of church translate to faith encompassing all of our lives versus this dichotomy? It seems like how we think about it here creates that dichotomy. Is that possibly true?
No. Oh, that's perfectly true. And like I said, in many of those places around the world, that mindset has been transplanted there. You know, it didn't start with evangelical gospel preaching missionaries solely. You know, obviously Catholicism that's had a major emphasis around the world, or even Islam, they all have locations that are very vital to their function. And so those things are ingrained sometimes already. And you know, even missionaries have to combat that just like you do here. I don't know that there's a lot of combat going on here, though. I don't know that a lot of people are having your mindset. Now, I will tell you, you know, I've seen kind of the anecdotal ground level. Lots of church planters go out. They spend that first year building relationships, sharing the gospel, discipling people, building leaders, and that's their focus. And then after a year, they start, you know, setting up and tearing down every Sunday. And then that Sunday morning worship service, which should be vital, becomes the all-consuming part of the ministry.
Yeah.
And that part of building relationships, sharing the gospel, disciple making, leadership development, those things then become secondary or tertiary. And so, you know, that's a reality here. You know, depending on the ministry overseas, how do you get to set the DNA? And if you get to set the DNA, it's usually easier perhaps sometimes because they're not so materialistic, you know, location driven all the time, but it's a little easier there.
Yeah. And you mentioned like the holistic as a lesson that we can take. Do you think that not having just set on a location and a service leads to that?
Okay, so you're saying not having a location would help us to be more holistic?
Yeah.
Is that your question?
Or maybe it benefits globally.
Well,
or do you think it's culturally?
I think it's contingent. I do think it depends on the situation and the people and their mindset and the way they've been taught and of course, conditioned by their own culture. I would say, though, overall, that people who are more holistic would be less reliable on that location.
I appreciate that, clearing that, because I think that's – and one thing you started with, I want to make sure I bring this out, is because – it can sound negative how I'm coming across with the Western church, westernizing on the mission field. You talked about the benefits coming. And I don't want that dismissed.
Correct.
And God has used the United States. He's used the West. He's used churches here. Still is in a mighty way.
That's a great point. And, you know, even in my missions lessons and classes, I try to remain more balanced because, you know, we're always talking about the negative part because that's the part that becomes the major hindrances and barriers to cross-cultural practitioners, missionaries. So you got to really point out those things that can potentially, you know, hold up the whole thing you went there to do.
Yeah.
But to your point, I certainly could admit right here that when I went to the mission field, man, to say that I was green would be the understatement of the day of my life. But hey, I'm thankful that in our weakness, He's strong, you know, and God uses us even when we don't know. And I guess, you know, the truth could be stated, Jake, if any of us ever thought, hey, we got this, we're in big trouble. So there is that reliance. But no, good point. So thankful for faithful missionaries and people who endured so much more than modern-day missionaries have to carry the gospel and transform the world that way,
And I just know the little bit of glimpse I've gotten in Brazil, a little bit in the Middle East, like the Christianity, how it's lived out, and you summed it up perfectly. And that's why I love these interviews because it's like, you know, I know your heart. I've heard you speak, and I've sat some of your teaching, but to hear it broke down of this holistic approach, this simplicity in how they live, see that played out. But I see that difference, and I think as parents, as we're trying to instill this faith, like, we only know what we know.
Right.
And if you've not had the chance to go and see the church globally and see how Christianity could be lived out.
Right.
And it's eye-opening. And I'm sure, you know, people that go on trips, short-term trips, come back and say, could you leave us with, as parents, could you leave us with a story, a lesson from the global church that really might just open our eyes to what that could be.
Yeah, it's good. Hey, I would just simply go back to the way we started and, you know, using these two words kind of as the theme of our conversation today, holism and simplicity. So, you know, watching people come to Christ in West Africa, as we had the opportunity to do, where we served personally as a family, and then seeing those whole families where the family unit is non-existent in that culture for the most part for a lot of different reasons.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Very, very weak. And then, of course, to see them find their identity in Christ and their direction in God's Word in that area of their life. Hey, you know, I know it's the basis of what you talk about here. I would just simply say I have seen the gospel not just transform families. I've seen the gospel actually be the genesis of a family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's awesome.
There was no family.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, people come to Christ, the parents obviously, and, you know, immorality and unfaithfulness and irresponsibility, all of that changes.
Yeah.
And it is amazing. So all I would say to the parents in the U.S. is make sure that the things that are important but are to be categorized more as the busy stuff and not the foundational stuff. Let the foundational stuff be the thing that defines you and your family, primarily the gospel. Let the gospel define you.
I'm glad you shared that. The genesis of the family, my wife or her parents came to Christ when she was 10.
Wow.
And
everything changed.
Yeah, through a church plant, through a missionary knocking on their door.
Awesome.
And you know, to see who they are now and all that stuff. And they were doing some things right. But what it did to that family in so many ways, I pastored just 20 minutes for here for 11 years. And in my desk drawer, I had this old clipping from an old newspaper. The church was really old. And it talked about when it came in, when the church began, it talked about it being the Wild West there and things out of control, saloons and all that stuff. And it talks about the start of Sunday school in the town and how it changed things. And so I know there's some parents listening and the gospel has already transformed your family.
Right.
But it's easy to forget that.
It's easy for it to become the periphery and those busy things to become the center.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, think about those families that had nothing family-wise, and all of a sudden the gospel is the genesis of them. Just go back to where you know you ought to be and live out the gospel in your family and let that be that thing that is the center. But then when you get off-center, it will recenter you. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. But you're really talking about it hitting parents first, right?
Oh.
And then translating, trickling down.
Yeah. No, it was not, you know, it was very common for kids to come to church and the parents didn't come. That was very common in that West African culture. Obviously, if and when the parents came to Christ, that's the genesis of that family unit, really.
Yeah.
You know, the kids didn't have that ability, but the parents did. Yeah.
So I've gone totally off script. And I'm so glad.
Yeah.
One thing you brought up, and I want to ask this for you, I'll let you go. You tended to talk about in this whole the holism.
Yeah.
It seems like you're talking about obedience to the authority of the word.
Oh. Absolutely.
That's something I have seen in the Middle Eastern church is just the reliance on obedience to the word.
Right.
Could you speak to that globally?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, once again, just tying it into our whole conversation here, you know, as Westerners and a unique ability or whatever you want to call it, handicap, to compartmentalize everything.
Yeah.
We tend to think we have both the option and the ability to pick and choose what we're going to obey, you know? And whether we would ever say that out loud, that's kind of the functionality of us. And over there, since, like we said, when they come to Christ, it may be more difficult for them to overcome some of those pagan beliefs, some of those traditional beliefs to come to the Lord. But boy, when they do, they come all the way. And one of those things is, man, their love for God's word and their submission to it. And as we all know, if we ever get to that spot in our sanctification, it just changes everything.
Tremendous. John David, thank you.
Hey,
like, you've won it, seen it, and it come across your desk every day in conversations and paperwork and budget line items and all those things. Thank you for giving us a picture of the global church.
Hey, God bless you, Jake.
Thank you. To be fair, this was a bit of a setup, and it's going to be a setup for our next several guests. They don't know I'm talking about a fully integrated faith. I'm just asking them some questions about their discipline and what they've seen around the world. And right out of the gate, he hit us with holism, the global church and their holism, that faith encompasses everything they do, that they're fully integrating faith. I hope that vision of the church globally kind of helps us begin to think what it could look like for our children, for our families, to have a fully integrated faith. It's not separate, that you don't have faith over here, you've got life over here. But rather, in our following of Christ, weaves and connects through and really motivates everything that we do. That's the hope. We've just started this discussion. I hope it helps, because we don't know what we don't know. You've been listening to Stand Firm Parents. Stand Firm Parents is a production of Stand Firm Ministries in partnership with LifeWord Studios, created by Jake McCandless and Brandon Harrington of Dime Collective. Again, thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe, share, and most importantly, stand firm.